From the KTO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Preliminary numbers released by the state show the number of opioid-related overdose deaths in Alaska fell between 2017 and 2018. Andy Jones with Alaska's Health Department told lawmakers Thursday this suggests that steps being taken to address opioid abuse are working, but he said there's more work to do. The preliminary data shows there were 100 opioid-related overdose deaths in Alaska in 2017 and 58 last year. The state says the total cost associated with its response to opioid abuse was $210 million in fiscal years 2017 and 2018. That includes federal funds and substance abuse treatment and recovery grants. Jones says agencies in their responses need to look more broadly at more than one substance. He says alcohol remains the biggest problem in Alaska by far. Last month, the state put out a new resource designed to help schools support students who have experienced trauma. It contains recommendations like embrace culture in the classroom and teach students how to calm themselves down when they get upset. KTO's Zoe Gruskin reports on how educators are hoping schools can do a better job meeting the needs of Alaskan students.
Two out of three Alaskan adults have experienced childhood trauma, and trauma can get in the way of learning.
A student can't walk through the door and forget everything that happened to him before he walked through that door, whether he didn't have breakfast, mom and dad were fighting, different things like that.
Sharon Fischel is an education specialist at the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. She says thinking about trauma in schools is not new in Alaska.
Everybody wanted to do trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive, trauma-engaged schools, but they were all recreating the wheel.
So with the Association of Alaska School Boards and a half a dozen other partners, Fischel's department set out to create the wheel, a way that schools can help children who have experienced major life stressors or traumatic events. That includes what students experience firsthand, as well as the ongoing impacts of historic events, like the way colonialism worked through the educational system in Alaska. Today, Fischel says engaging with trauma in schools is about shifting the mindset from what's wrong with you to what's happened to you. That's a shift that Catherine Mendenhall appreciates. She's been a teacher in Alaska for 18 years, both on and off the road system. Mendenhall says schools set lofty goals for their students and face pressure to meet them, but emotional needs have to come first.
If we're wanting students to learn math and science and how to read, and they are stuck in fight or flight mode, they're not going to be able to use all of their mind to learn because so much of it is tied up in wondering whether they're safe.
The new state resource emphasizes a team approach to helping students deal with trauma. Mendenhall says this is already working at her school. Parents, teachers, specialists, even the school principal is involved. But for a lot of schools, building teams to address students' emotional needs will mean hiring more people or asking staff to do more with less. And without a major priority shift, Mendenhall is not optimistic about the future of school funding in Alaska. She says, we'll get what we pay for.
Unless we have more mental health help, more counselors, more people who are experienced in helping these students through their trauma, the schools are not going to succeed because the students aren't going to be able to do the tasks we expect them to do.
Last week, Governor Dunleavy's administration proposed doing away with $20 million of public school funding that the Alaska legislature had agreed to in the last budget. His plan for the state's next budget and any future changes to education spending will be released February 13th. In Juneau, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
Ducks nesting on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta may be the latest species at risk on the front lines of climate change. KYUK's Joanna Urich reports from last week's Marine Science Symposium in Anchorage. In a lab test, spectacled and Steller's eiders, already listed as threatened, almost died when exposed to saline water at levels already found where they nest.
It was emotionally tough stuff. Researcher Tula Holman was clearly moved, as was the audience, when she showed the video of ducklings exposed to brackish water with 6 parts salt per thousand.
Again, I want to emphasize that the response was unexpected.
6 parts per thousand is a salinity level below that already present in the mixed waters where the two species of sea ducks, the threatened spectacled and Steller's eiders, nest. In the Seward Sea Life Center lab, 3 ducklings can be seen reacting quickly just after a few days' exposure. They hunch over, unable to lift their heads, eat, preen, or stay afloat in water.
Essentially, at this point, the ducklings were not able to forage or swim normally, and we considered them to not have survived in the wild.
Holman's study was the first conducted on spectacled and Steller's eiders. Because they migrate to the sea later than their cousins, she already expected them to be more sensitive. She thought she was being conservative when she designed the study to test at 6 parts per thousand, because she had found those levels a few years earlier when she first started working on the Delta. She says with the loss of sea ice and more storm surges, the levels now in the nesting grounds are up to 10 parts per thousand. What does her lab experiment mean for ducklings in the wild?
These ducklings were reared in kind of ideal conditions with unrestricted food, and if there are some other factors, maybe even a lesser degree effect could have some impacts in the wild.
But those wild conditions could also be better because salinity levels vary. Seeing what she saw at the lab, Holman reacted quickly and stopped the experiment to bathe her subjects in fresh water. There was a palpable sense of relief in the audience when she showed a video of the same 3 tiny ducklings now paddling, even frolicking in the water.
And this is the ducklings a couple of days later, so they're busy and happy and with good waterproofing again.
Holman went on to document that just a week into their life, Steller's and spectacled eider ducklings can tolerate higher salinity. At 8 days of age, her subjects showed no effects in salty water with 8 parts per thousand. Holman is working with her federal colleagues in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to produce maps of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta with salinity levels going back to 2013. The idea is to assess the habitat, not just for eiders, but for other water birds. There's a lot of work ahead.
We know very little about potential salinity sensitivity in these other species.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta has the world's largest population of water birds. For KYUK, this is Johanna Urich.
A trail of fresh shoe prints leading to several different driveways and cars in an airport area neighborhood led Juneau police to an apparent burglar. In a press release, the Juneau Police Department reports a night shift patrol spotted the suspicious footprints around 3:45 a.m. Wednesday. Police tracked the prints, found drag marks from an open shed, and eventually caught up to the apparent footprint maker. Police say the suspect refused an order to stop and led them on a foot chase through the neighborhood before he was arrested. They found the shed owner's chainsaw and 2 bags on the ground near this trail. Police identified the man as 24-year-old Christian Thomas Knapp. He's being charged with a felony and a misdemeanor for burglary and theft. Police say he's being held without bail. Online court records list the Public Defender Agency for an attorney. Police are also soliciting outdoor surveillance footage from that morning in the area of Radcliffe Lane, Meadow Lane, Scott Drive, and Kevin Court. Contact Officer Schur at 907-500-0753 with video or other known thefts from that area.